There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred and Little Steven's Underground Garage, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Today, my guest is Ryan Hamilton. His album 1221 resulted from recordings he made and released on the 12th of each month over the course of last year. Because record pressing plants are so backed up, no provision was made to issue the album on vinyl. But the folks responsible for National Record Store Day stepped in, contacting both Ryan and Wicked Cool Records, and a special vinyl version of the album was made available recently on the 23rd of April. The track Do the Damage is a recent coolest song of the world in the Underground Garage, and we'll get a taste of that now, followed by my interview with Ryan on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for another Coolest Conversations at Little Steven's Underground Garage. My guest is musician and songwriter Ryan Hamilton, who is a favorite of ours here in the Underground Garage with a couple of releases on Wicked Cool Records as Ryan Hamilton and the Harlequin Ghosts. His most recent full-length feature, it's got him solo. It's his 1221 project of last year and will be available on vinyl as part of Record Store Day tomorrow, April the 23rd. How are you, Ryan?
I'm very good. Happy to be back here talking to you.
I'm happy to be chatting with you again, man. So let's see. Think here for a second. The last time we spoke, it was in September of 2020, around the release of Nowhere to Go But Everywhere. Mm. And the good thing about that bad time was that neither you or anybody close to you had contracted the virus. Have you all since remained healthy since then?
You know, we dodged a couple of bullets. My parents both got sick, but they were vaccinated and they got through it okay. I had been fine up until about a month ago, and I got it really bad.
And
I know, and it was like kind of the last thing I expected to happen. But you know, I'm okay. I was vaccinated. It probably would have been a lot worse. And that was the big shock, I think, for me and for my family. We had all kind of been through it, and everybody was healthy and okay, and then all of a sudden, I get really sick. So that was not a very fun surprise, but we're all good now. Everybody's good.
Well, great. Well, we do have this record store thing to talk about, but first I want to back up and discuss the project, the 1221. So every month last year, on the 12th of each month, you released a new tune. And was the idea there that this was a song you had to, you kind of came up with the idea of a song and worked out the arrangement, recorded the song, and then put it out the following month? Was that the idea?
That was the idea. And, you know, just that, to have that, you know, 1221 just work out the way that it did on the, you know, the year and the months and the day of the month. And it was just kind of weird the way it all fell together, this idea of what do I do to stay busy? It's another year of COVID. We're not touring, you know, to have the initial idea, have Wicked Cool go, that's a great idea. What if we did this? And we released it on the 12th of every month, 12 songs in 12 months on the 21st year. And it was born out of, you know, the frustration of, you know, wanting to stay sane and stay creative while we couldn't tour. And I got to give it to the record label for embracing it and just kind of running with that initial idea.
Well, didn't you have something like a similar thing at some point for the fan club?
Yeah, we did. There have been a few kind of versions of a fan club. It started, oh God, I mean, the platforms, things like Patreon, Kickstarter, there have been several different ones, right? So I've been kind of trying to roll with the punches and get on the one that was the most relevant at the time. But there was a brief thing where we just kind of went out, created a separate website. It was all in-house. And for 1 year, we did something similar with a monthly release. But that was more kind of demos that had been laying around for a while and, you know, songs that people were sort of familiar with.
And your partner in crime here is your, I guess I'll call him your longtime producer. Certainly you've worked with Dave for a while, but Dave Draper, right? He's the guy you would bounce the ideas off of and work the arrangements out with.
Yes. I've learned kind of the hard way to surround myself with people who are very supportive and positive and, you know, they have that kind of, you'll understand this, when you work with someone that gets excited about an idea that you have, and then they kind of make the idea better, and then you get excited about what they did, and it becomes this really cool back and forth, and the end product is just kind of, it's leveled up two or three times, because you're in that environment with a creative partner that you work well with, and Dave has become that for me. He's become, you know, my songwriting partner, my producer, and I would struggle to want to work with anybody else, not because they're not talented, only because Dave and I have done so well together.
You're like this old couple sitting there at the,
it is like that.
At the Golden Corral, you know.
It is like that. That's funny.
You know, so the way the mechanics worked out here, I mean, he's over in the UK, so you're sending tracks back and forth.
Yes. So, I mean, we did everything, all the instrumentation, programmed the drums via the internet. I would record my parts in my home studio here in Texas. Mm-hmm. He would do his stuff in the UK, and we would just kind of send it back and forth, which we've really grown accustomed to the past few years. And I thank God for technology, because we couldn't do it without it.
Absolutely. Well, if I'm recalling correctly, you had referred to Nowhere to Go But Everywhere as your divorce album. Mm-hmm. It seems like there's some overlap with 1221. Is that fair to say to some of those?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's funny to listen to Nowhere to Go But Everywhere now, and kind of being healthier and happier and on the other side of a divorce, which people always seem to cringe when I just talk about divorce, but we should be able to talk about it. It's okay, you know?
Well, right. In fact, if you recall, when we brought this up before, you had mentioned, you know, you felt a little sort of like, well, I'll tell people that. And I was like, oh no, man, I'm happily divorced. I mean,
yeah. I mean, that is a thing. Happily divorced is absolutely a thing.
Well, and, right. Yeah, I mean, if it was meant to be, then it would be. And if it's not, then it's something you still have to get through, get over,
absolutely,
move on. Yeah. But it's much better than being, you know, that's a miserable state. But to have stayed in an unhappy marriage is just an ever-ending miserable state, you know?
It is. And, you know, to your point, to your question, 1221 absolutely saw some overlap. And even, you know, every month I would start to write an original, and if it wasn't as good as I hoped it would be, me and Dave would pivot and try and pick kind of a more obscure cover song, you know, from a band that either had a song that should have been a hit or a band that wasn't that well known. And I found myself, even with those cover songs and picking, you know, from already established, written, you know, works, they're like breakup songs or, you know, relationship songs. And it was funny to me because I felt that too. And it's funny that you mention it and ask about it because that definitely happened. It was not intentional at all.
Well, I'm going to ask you about those cover songs. There's a Chuck Prophet tune, Bob Schneider, Roger Klein. But first, I wanted to ask you about our coolest song in the world this week, Do the Damage. Originally, we were playing that like that was the song for last October. What can you tell me about the track, Do the Damage?
You know, it's really interesting. This song, I went to my longtime manager, Steve Rozier, who's, you know, it's that rare thing where you have a manager that becomes like family, and we've been in the trenches together for a long time now. And when you're having to come up with material every month, you know, and it was important to me to not be sitting on like a stockpile of songs, to really come at it fresh. So that month I went to Steve. Steve is a former stand-up comedian. He likes to write material and ideas still. And I said, Steve, what would you think about writing the lyrics to a song? Even if it's just like verbal vomit, just send me a page of something, right? Anything.
But I have you said, even if it's verbal, what'd you say? Even if it's verbal vomit?
I did say that.
Well, that alone sounds like a great song title.
I don't know where that came from, but yeah, it's like, that is what I said. But I said, I have this idea for, you know, Do the Damage, like the damage is a dance in the 50s, you know, do the twist, but Do the Damage. Like that's, so run with that. And he sent me this page of just kind of, you know, stream of consciousness kind of ideas and write. And the first sentence had loose lips sink ships. And I was like, well, I'm kind of off to the races now because I mean, that was it. And it just sent me in that direction. He did this part about when your daydreams get dark, and that's in the song. And so it became this co-write with my manager. I mean, he did write several of the lyrics that appear in the song. But to me, that's the coolest thing about Do the Damage, is it became this thing with my manager, and I was trying to find creative ways to come up with a fresh idea every month. And this song has become the fastest song of mine to ever get to, I think it's 30,000 streams on Spotify. And it makes me feel good that Steve is attached to it. This song has kind of, you know, become its own monster.
I noticed that singing on the backing vocals, Emily Ewing, and she's on just about every track.
Yes, that's true.
So can you remind me? I don't think we've spoken about Emily, and I apologize if we have before and I'm forgetting, but who is Emily Ewing?
So Emily works with Dave a lot in the UK.
All right.
Yeah, they're in the same town. She sang on something, I think the first thing I ever did with Dave. And I ask if she's available every time. She has this beautiful voice. Her voice blends really well with mine, and it was total accident that it works as well as it does. She also sings a lot with Ginger Wildheart, and it's just part of this little kind of recording community that me and a few other artists use through Dave.
It was back around August, last August, we started playing a track, your selection we're offering for August was Permanent Holiday. And right as we were playing that, I got a longtime listener to the Underground Garage wrote me an email. And, you know, generally with this guy, it's pretty light stuff about, you know, what's been played and on. But he wrote me, he really riled up about the tune. And the gist of it was that he had heard, he listens to these, the coolest conversations, and he heard us talk about before about your struggles with depression, suicidal thoughts. I was impressed by how you had tried to deal and manage those challenges. And he was upset that you had written Permanent Holiday, which he was calling a pro-suicide song. So what is he misunderstanding?
Yeah, so I would never write a pro-suicide song, first of all. I think that's very important for me to say out loud. The song, if you listen to the lyrics, and I'm not one to typically explain lyrics, but this seems to be a question that I get asked sometimes about this song.
Yeah.
So if the song says, rolling down the interstate, right up to those pearly gates. So to me, it's about, yes, wanting to escape, but finding a path in a literal road that leads to heaven. So it's just wanting to get out of there and driving your car really fast and not, it's not a song that's pro-suicide. It's a song about wanting to escape. And then you, whether it's on accident or on purpose, you find the literal path to heaven and you drive your car there. And I don't get upset whenever people misunderstand or they hear me explain it in that way and they go,
yeah,
well, it's still about, you know, being dead. I'm like, no, it's not, nobody's dying here. It's just about having that struggle in that moment where you want out and you find a way to escape and find heaven, whatever you believe in. For me, it's heaven. We've talked a lot about, and I talk about it a lot, where I was raised, how I was raised in church.
Right.
So to me, it's heaven. It's like you want that heaven on earth experience. You found a path and a vehicle to get there. But it is in no way pro-suicide or, you know, I can understand why people would think that, but it's more about the struggle and finding a way through it than the struggle and then ending it.
And so your vehicle is music.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you said that because, you know, as a songwriter, sometimes things make sense to you and you're like, oh, I really like that. And yes, for me, the vehicle is music. The vehicle, not to get too deep, but can be whatever that person benefits the most from using.
So you've mentioned several tunes on the album where you would find, you and Dave would try and come up with some sort of a cover song, tune maybe not, people weren't as familiar with. And one of those is a Chuck Prophet song, Big Man. Now, is that one that he had never recorded?
Correct.
And did anybody else do that, or are you the first one to do that tune?
No, I'm the first one. Chuck sent that song to me, for me, and I was honored for him to do that. And it's a song that he had thought about putting on a previous album, and it's just kind of been sitting around, and him and his songwriting buddy just never found a way to get it where they hoped it would go.
Yeah.
So when I was reaching out to a few friends for this project, I said, Chuck, do you have anything? He's like, oh, I have just a song for you. And and he sent that to me. And I tweaked it a little, but the song is as Chuck sent it to me, just with a little more life. And he freaked out. He called me as soon as he heard it and was over the moon, which made me feel like I did my job.
Oh, very cool. I'm very happy because that's the next thing is, you know, how did he receive it? Very cool.
Yeah.
So, well, now these other guys, the Bob Schneider, Roger Klein, I mean, I'm totally not familiar with these guys at all. The Bob Schneider tune, Babies, one for Roger Klein, Bandidos. So who are those guys and what's it about those songs that resonate with you?
Yeah, so Bob Schneider is an acclaimed singer-songwriter from Texas. He lives in Austin. He's kind of an Austin staple. He's been, you know, playing at the Saxon Pub every Monday night for 30 years or something. And he is just, a long time ago, in the first band I had that was based in Texas that did okay, and, you know, first record deal, first tour bus, all of those things. One of those tours was with Bob Schneider. And he's just become like a big brother to me in the music business. And he was the first person to ever make me feel like I could be my weird, true self, you know, and that was okay. Right. Like, it's okay. Yeah. That's what makes you good at what you do. So just be that way. You don't have to be any different. And we've had a really great relationship ever since. I look up to him a lot. So I reached out to him just like I did Chuck and some other people. And he sent me a folder with several songs, and Babies just really spoke to me. It's an odd song. It's lyrically odd, but yeah. Beautiful. And it just, you know, it stuck out to me and I couldn't wait to do it. And yeah, Bob's been really good to me. And he's one of those artists that the people who know him and love him, that fan base, they're all about it. I mean, they are all yeah. in. They're wonderful. But he's kind of found this way to, you know, stay kind of like successfully underground, but he's a big deal still. I mean, he sells out theaters anywhere he goes, and he's not necessarily a household name, though in my opinion he deserves to be.
Right, but that's I think that's a great place to be, and it's a fine line to walk.
It is.
But yeah. but it's great. It's like you know, it's often said there's no middle class in like rock and roll, but that is sort of the middle class level where you can financially stay afloat doing yeah. music, and you don't necessarily have to deal with the getting bigger and to a certain, you know, there's like a tipping point and then, you know, it's much harder to sort of maintain. I think of like Southern Culture on the Skids as an example. That's sort of
that
you know, they live off their the music, you know, they can live off of that, and they have a, you know, they have houses and so forth, but they're not, you know, rich by any means, but they're able sure. to continue to do what they love doing. And I, you know, you got to put food on the table.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the world I live in. I've been there for a long time now, and I'm thankful, yeah. Thankful for it. And I'm happy to, you know, just get to do this and be okay.
So this tune, Bandidos, that guy, Roger Klein actually has a bar in Mexico called Bandidos.
He does.
have you ever been there?
I have not. They invited me to play that festival that they do in Mexico. It didn't get to do it. And then, you know, it's been all of the things with COVID the past few years, but I do want to go. Roger was the front man in a band called The Refreshments in the late 90s that had a couple of big hits. And one of them was Bandidos, and it just never became what, in my opinion, it should have. So I reached out to him, said, I want to do the song. And he's gone on to be Roger Klein and the Peacemakers. And they, like Bob, have operated in that world where they may not have the success that they deserve, in my opinion, but they're doing great. And I was excited to do that song. And I kind of split opinion with his fan base. Some people were like, you'll never touch the original. And other people were like, you did a great version. But that's the trick, right? Is doing a yeah. good version, not trying to do the original, doing a right. good version. Right. So I got a big kick out of that, out of people arguing over if my version was any good. I mean, I hate that I love that stuff, but I do.
Yeah. Well, so the album ends with Ready to Love Again. Mm-hmm. And as it's the last track, this was a December contribution to the album, to the project. Since so much of your songwriting is personal, your original songwriting, can we assume the scars are healed enough for you to get back up on the love horse again at some point? Or is that more of an aspirational song?
Nah, you can absolutely just assume that all day. And Love Horse is like a great name for a 70s rock band. Was there ever a band called Love Horse? Because there should have been, or there should be now. Somebody,
well, you know what their hit, you know what the Love Horse hit was?
What?
Verbal Vomit. Isn't that weird? Isn't that weird that they would, you think,
that's so weird,
they would write a song like Verbal Vomit and be a band like Love Horse? That's
Love
weird.
Horse.
Incongruous. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh God. But yes, I'm in a great place. I'm very happy in my life. And yeah, that song was kind of a testament at the time to getting to that place.
1221, the album's out on Wicked Cool Records. Why this tie-in with Record Store Day? The album was not going to be on vinyl, and they thought, oh, we need to do something for Record Store Day, or what's up with the Record Store Day thing?
You know, Manfred, it's crazy because we weren't going to do vinyl. It was like, you know, we'd put it on CD. The way it was all coming together month by month, there wasn't really a time frame to put it on vinyl. And then Record Store Day reached out to wicked cool. Like they choose a few exclusive releases. So this is actually a Record Store Day exclusive chosen by the people who run Record Store Day. And it goes in record stores nationwide, here in the United Kingdom and in Canada. And it's a huge get, not just for me, but for Wicked Cool Records. It was never the plan. It was, you know, it was a huge surprise. And one thing it did was speed up the process of me writing and recording songs. I didn't really have till December to do that last one. we had to get it all turned in because of the vinyl delays.
Right. I was just thinking about it. Yeah.
So yes, we got Record Store Day, but there's a little bit of a panic when everybody went, yeah, Ryan, you know, you're going to do a song a month. We need you to go ahead and do these last four right now. And that's what I did. And the irony being those songs were the biggest songs on the album, Do the Damage, Shots Fired. And they were all done in a little bit of a panic.
well, yeah, you know, when you got to, when the heat is up on the burner, I mean, you got to dance a little faster.
Yeah, I did.
So, you know, we're talking about this 1220 project and so the Record Store Day thing tomorrow. And one interesting thing about you is, man, there's always something else going on. So I was preparing these questions like last night and went back and listened back through, you know, all the tracks again. And I'm about to, finish work for the evening. And I look back at Facebook because I had sent a couple of messages to people. I wanted to see if there was any response, but they're in the center of the, because I'm do this on the desktop in the center of the feed, there is bing, there's your face, there's your visage, your, you know, you pop right up there. And it's with this woman, Carol Hodge. You have to tell me about her, because I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, somehow some type of Kickstarter thing, some collaboration with Carol Hodge. So who's Carol Hodge and what is this project and when is it supposed to happen?
Sure. So Carol Hodge is my bandmate. She's from the UK. She plays piano and sings in my band, my touring band. And she's sung on a few things with me on records, but she's really just been my, you know, touring. She's like family. She's like my sister. You know, we've been all over the world together. But when we started coming out the other side of COVID and these tours started getting rescheduled, a lot of artists like me, you get bombarded with, okay, this has been rescheduled for this, and we have these new tour dates, and it's too much. And you're trying to navigate all of this. A lot of us are. And these US tour dates, which are happening in May, full transparency, I didn't have enough money to get my band here. And because there was a lot of other money fronted for other tours later in the year, and just a lot of moving parts. And I talked to Carol, and Carol was like, I really want to come, but I don't know how we're going to do it. And I said, I don't know either. So we launched the Kickstarter really just to get Carol to America. And what we said was, hey, we have these opportunities. We're trying to get out the other side of COVID. And if you'll help us cover these costs, me and Carol will do some songs together, and you can listen to the songs exclusively here on Kickstarter. And not only did these people go for this thing and raise the funds to help get Carol to America, it's at like almost 400% funded. So it went crazy.
Wow.
And it's just this little Kickstarter exclusive thing that we're doing for our friends and fans that follow us. And that's what it is. It was just this little thing that has gone crazy.
But crazy in a good way.
Crazy in a good way.
There's so much wackadoodle stuff in the world. It's good to have some good crazy.
It is good to have some good crazy. And I know it's just a little Kickstarter thing that won't actually go out into the world, but I'm very thankful to have the support that I do and people following me. And, you know, they did a really wonderful thing, turning a negative into a positive with getting Carol here.
And you mentioned these tour dates happening in May. I was looking at your tour schedule, and I know that in Falling Overseas, there's a lot of things, and also June and July, I got some things there in the UK. But there are these several stateside shows in May. Let's see, Sellersville, Pennsylvania, New York City, Pawling, New York, Clifton, New Jersey. And those dates will be with fellow Wicked Cool artists Kurt Baker and Soraya.
Correct.
So how did that, how did the tour come together?
Yeah, so this is something I know that's been kind of thrown around for a little while. And it finally kind of came together with Soraya and Kurt and myself. And it's just something that kind of been talked about that we kind of went, let's go ahead and pull the trigger on this. Everybody's excited to play shows again.
Yeah,
let's go for it and just see. So we got a great reaction from that part of the country. As you know, and as we've talked about, I'm in a unique and sometimes frustrating situation where I'm a Texan fronting a band from England.
Yeah.
So that creates its own set of challenges, but we were able to work it out. And man, I really can't wait for those shows. They're going to be really cool and they're going to be a lot of fun.
Who exactly is backing you? You're going to have Carol with you, and who else is in the band for those shows?
It's just me and Carol. It's just, you know, we're going to do a really beautiful, cool, stripped down thing. And I can't wait. We've done this once before on tour in the UK with Mike Peters and The Alarm. So we have done it once before and it went over really well. I know that it's a kind of a rock and roll tour. So we're going to be the chill set on the rock and roll tour, but that's okay. I'm confident in the songs, and I really love performing that way.
Yeah, well, that's excellent. So have you played with Kurt or Soraya before?
Never. You know, it's funny is we've all never met in person. We've become friends and, you know, through the record label, and we, you know, have each other's phone numbers and text and email and all of that, but this will be our first time to ever spend time together face to face.
Excellent. Well, the cut we'll go out on is Shots Fired, and one of my favorite on the album. I love the lyrics in there, you know, from just right at the top, right? Shots fired, my baby is a rattlesnake, sharp tongue, more venom than a heart can take. And that's just mwah. Yeah, that's
thanks, great. Manfred, I appreciate, you know, that.
I listened to that and I hear the lyrics and I was like, wow, see how productive anger and disappointment can be.
That's true. You know, what's funny is Stevie told me last time I saw him was at a dinner in New York before all of the insanity. And we were talking about going through divorce and he was giving me great advice. And then we started talking about music and he said, you're going to be sad for a while and you're going to write some sad songs and those songs will be good, but then you're going to get mad. And those songs are going to be really good.
And he was right, because you were saying...
He was right. He was totally right.
Because the Shots Fired, that was like around... It's one of the last four songs you had to come up with, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was one of the ones that sort of like those last four got a bit more oomph or recognition than the
Absolutely.
Others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they were born out of course, my experience in going through a divorce and the frustration of having to get it all turned in for record store day.
Well, I may have told you this before, but I'll share it again because it is pretty funny that in the Woggles, the drummer, Dan, he writes some great songs, but these songs only come out of when he has inevitably has another breakup.
Yeah.
And so... We look forward to every new relationship he begins because we know at the end of it.
Oh man, that's, you know, amazing. Yeah.
You can't really, you know, be upfront about that ahead of time, you know. I mean, because yeah. You know, we do obviously wish him the best success, but
of course.
But either way, the band will win.
Yeah. And you know, even though you wish him the best, you're also booking studio time 6 months in advance.
That's right. That's right. Just want to make sure you have your schedule clear.
I don't know. I might be busy then.
I don't know. You might not be. You might not be. And just in case.
Man, that's amazing.
Ryan, I want to thank you again for speaking with me on our Coolest Conversations. Always a pleasure when we get a chance to chat some, man.
Oh man, my pleasure. I really love talking to you and I'm forever thankful for the support of, you know, LSUG and everybody around there. It's a great family to be a part of.
Yeah. Well, let's give a spin now to Shots Fired off 1221, available from Wicked Cool Records on vinyl tomorrow as part of Record Store Day. is Ryan Hamilton and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Those were Shots Fired from Ryan Hamilton, and off his 1221 album, available now on vinyl as part of a special Record Store Day release. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Ryan for chatting with me today, and also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Back in 1993, Mike Leonard recorded with the late Replacements guitarist Bob Stinson as the Bleeding Hearts, and that album has finally seen the light of day as a special Record Store Day release. Mike will join me next time around on your Coolest Conversations, and we'll talk about the band and that recording. It's your next Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.